Rumpus time is over.
There's a new sheriff in town.
Luke's crazy.
Did you hear that, Brian?
Luke, we're gonna have company!
Brian! Bad guys of the galaxies, beware! The defender of the universe is here!
In order to form a more perfect union.
Luke! Brian!
Luke Bryans!
One margarita, two margarita, three margarita shot.
Stop that! You're not going into a song while I'm here.
And now for something completely different.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Talking Heads.
Hello and welcome to Dueling Tangents with Luke Mathers, minus the Brian Kelly on this Tuesday afternoon. A couple more days of R&R, relaxation for the big guy, but in his absence, I'm joined by Jesse. You're in Madison,
I'm here.
Solidarity Realty Studios. Jesse, how you doing this afternoon?
Fabulous. Thanks for having me again. You know I'm always available.
Yeah, man. Oh, well, yeah. We're thrilled to have you back. It's been a little while, but going to kick around a couple tangents with you this afternoon.
That sounds great. Hope everyone had their turkey and know what to do with their leftovers. Today, this morning, I made like third generation leftovers. This is the third iteration.
What?
Yeah. You know, KFC has the bowls with like, we'll just show the potatoes and the chicken and the cheese and the corn and whatever. So we, you know, call those sadness bowls. This morning.
Those aren't sadness bowls.
Ask Patton Oswalt. He's got a whole bit about it. You're like eating your feelings, right? So this morning, I took the sadness bowls, which were like second generation leftovers, and I made them into little breakfast fritters. So I'm just keeping the hope alive.
I was just saying, we're getting pretty far away from Thanksgiving, man.
Hey, I'm just, you know, every last part of the buffalo.
I hit it after 7 days. That means it's time for it to go in the trash and not hang out in the fridge anymore.
Well, I make stuff. 10 days is good. Sure. I was in food service.
So was I. And 10 days is pushing it, man. Okay. But we really appreciate you joining us this Tuesday afternoon here in the Solidarity Realty Studios, broadcasting across the Civic Media Network here in Madison on Devil Radio 92.7 FM, WTTN 1580 AM, in Waukesha on the Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Oshkosh Air Support in Oshkosh, locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids, Lake Air in Amory, and Radio from the Center in Richland Center. If you out there in the listening audience would like to contribute a tangent to today's show, you can give us a call, send us a text 844-967-2789 at 2:30. We will be joined by State Representative-elect Clinton Anderson. He's going to be joining us for the 45th Assembly District down in the Beloit area. So Clinton is going to be making an appearance here in studio, talking to us about his campaign to the State Assembly and see what things are up like for him now that he's been elected to that office. And before that legislative session begins, first legislative session, early January. It's been a while for those incumbents. They're going to have to shake off the dust, but Clinton will be able to share us a new perspective of somebody heading to the State Assembly for the first time. But in the meanwhile, till Clinton gets here to have that discussion with us, Jesse, there's some letters going around here in the state of Wisconsin today, kind of dueling letters, if you would.
Ooh.
And the first one's kind of interesting because it's all not that shocking. It's one of those letters where it got leaked to the press.
Leaked, you know, air quotes leaked.
Leaked as in one of the signatories, most likely, of this letter sent it to the press.
Sure.
It's a letter signed by the Republican congressional delegation here in the state of Wisconsin. So those five Republican super gerrymandered districts across the state, but got five of the six actually now. I don't know if Van Orden's name was signed onto it because he's not technically a congressman yet. He's a congressman-elect. I'll have to double-check to see if... I believe it's only five. I don't think Van Orden's name is on that. But the sixth name that is on it is U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. And they sent a letter to the Evers administration, incumbent Democratic Governor Tony Evers, just reelected to his second term. They sent him a letter and said, "Hey, Jesse, do you know what this letter said?"
Was it about something regurgitated from months ago that was also a nothing burger and had no basis, no germane reference to our shared objective reality?
Yes, that is very good. It is a regurgitation. It is not any new ideas. They're stealing from the Republican governor of South Dakota and I believe of North Carolina, or one of those mid-Atlantic states as well. And so this letter is telling Evers to ban TikTok.
Yes.
One of those campaign promises they're fulfilling on, right?
Yeah.
All of the month ago when we had those midterms that they were all gung-ho about gas prices and inflation and renewed spirit bringing the 2024 RNC to Milwaukee. They want to work together with Wisconsin and Democrats. And they send this letter that they leaked then to the press that could have been a phone call.
Could have been a phone call.
Could have called up Governor Tony Evers' administration and said, hey, let's get a meeting on the books. We'll get together, and this is something we should address.
And this letter is reference to some talk about TikTok, how it's because it's owned by a Chinese company, whether or not there are any vulnerabilities in the software that would allow any devices it's downloaded on to potentially become some instrument of unwitting recording, etc. Something that Homeland Security has known about for a while as a potentiality. Not something that Tony Evers either has anything to do with.
Wait, you're telling me
owns an account officially, or
the governor of Wisconsin doesn't have the ability to just then be able to take wide sweeping steps to prevent those national security concerns?
He should take his magic wand made of a unicorn horn, wave it around, and say tick, ta-gong, and then it's gone. Poof.
Well, and it's interesting because to me, this was right on time. I was looking at the calendar, you know, we're 28 days off from the midterms, and this is about, we've heard it iterated from Republican state lawmakers in the past of when silly season is. We're kind of in an extended silly season
usually
here
in
Wisconsin.
Usually they wait till after Christmas. I'm basically saying, you know, if you're going to bring silly season into the Christmas season, you, sirs and madams, are executing a war on Christmas, and I will not abide by it.
Well, they are in full swing of this silly season because,
no, sir, and thank you, ma'am.
The Republican lawmakers did the same exact thing 2 years ago. After the 2020 election wrapped up, from November through December, and then leading up to January 16th, there was a coordinated effort behind the scenes that we now know, thanks to the House Select Committee on January 6th, that the former guy who lost, and everybody was like, oh, what's the big deal? We'll just humor him a little with his complaining about the election being stolen when we knew it wasn't. But the other Republicans, Ted Cruz, Scott Walker, the same individuals signing on to these letters, Ron Johnson, Gallagher in Green Bay, Grothman, the Republicans here in Wisconsin were bemoaning Mr. and Mrs. Potato Head in 2020, 2 years ago.
Sure.
They were bemoaning Dr. Seuss.
Senator John Kennedy in Louisiana is stumping for Herschel Walker yesterday and also referenced Mr. Seuss and the works thereof. And
so they're still
the
on those 2020 grievances,
potentially
too.
Potentially androgynous Mr. and Mrs.
It's just Potato Head now. I believe Hasbro just calls it Potato Head.
Potato Head. Sure, it's you know, a very big deal that it really affects the pocketbook on the kitchen table of Americans everywhere.
And a whole lot, again, that government can do about, specifically, you know, in this instance with this letter, the Evers administration, from what they're referencing, doesn't even have a TikTok on any of the state accounts that these Republicans are bemoaning he banned it from. Because, yes, his camp, Evers himself, doesn't have a TikTok for he individually. And he doesn't have an Evers administration TikTok either. The campaign did use one leading up to, but per state law, that campaign didn't use that on any state-owned devices. And so it's a big nothing burger. But it's all about grievances for these Republicans, and they say one thing. They say they want to work together. They want to be able to renew those relationships between Republicans and Democrats here in elected offices in the state of Wisconsin. And rather than something that could have been a phone call, they drew it out to 3 pages long, and they leaked it to the press then, making it seem like this is a whole thing. And it worked, though, Jesse, because we're talking about it, but
sure,
we got to call it out. When it's nonsense, we got to call the nonsense out for what it is.
And there should be no surprise by anyone about any of this, because as we've discussed at ad infinitum, is that the Republican Party and the culture of the entire conservative American ecosystem is not dealing in good faith, right? So, of course, they're going to, you know, complain about, you know, this topic du jour or 2 years ago topic du jour or whatever the case may be. Yet, you know, when there were legitimate concerns from all 17 of our national security and intelligence agencies that they were talking to high rank members of both major political parties, members of the media, social media companies, saying, hey, look, we do know for sure, we all agree that there is a rampant Russian disinformation campaign meant to tweak and meddle in the U.S. Elections. you know, or when there was...
Well, Ron Johnson couldn't call that one out because he was a part of it. You know, he was in Moscow in 2017 on the 4th of July.
Yeah, or, you know, how many of these people actually have met with actual Russian agents and Russian spies at Mar-a-Lago?
Oh, they pop up in photos all the time.
So, yeah, you know, you can't take any of these people at their word. It's like they say about some people, it's like when are they lying? Well, Republicans are lying when their mouths are moving. So, of course, I'm not going to take any of this with anything less than, like, you know, 5 pounds of salt.
Well, this is the interesting part that then brings in the hypocrisy into it, because this is from a piece over at the Associated Press for Wisconsin. Scott Bauer writing it up and reading down in the piece, talking about TikTok. If you're not familiar with the exploding app, like every, like, I'm personally not on it. I don't know if you're on it, Jesse,
but
there are a lot of young people using this app now. And so reading from the Bauer piece at the AP, TikTok, which has exploded in popularity with nearly addictive scroll of videos, has also struggled to detect ads that contain blatant misinformation about U.S. elections, according to a recent report from nonprofit Global Witness and the Cybersecurity for Democracy team at New York University.
So it's like Elon Musk's Twitter at this point.
That and just everything that gets put out by these Republicans. They're the biggest proponents of the big lie, except for the fact that now maybe there is a bigger proponent in TikTok. And so it's just the pot calling the kettle black, and I do not understand how this then gets picked up as a serious media concern around the state. These Republicans are getting exactly what they want, and if we don't call out the hypocrisy, the hysteria that comes with these elected officials, they represent us in Congress, and this is what they're spending their days doing, Jesse.
I like my hysteria with a side order of week-old green beans.
Week-old green beans. Folks, you're listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke Mathers. We're joined in studio by my friend Jesse this Tuesday afternoon. Going to be joined by Clint Anderson, State Assembly Representative-elect, coming up at 2:30, but we got another letter to discuss as well. This one coming from the U.S. Department of Justice and seems a lot more serious than the letter we just wrapped up. But if you want to give us a call, send us a text, share your tangent, 844-967-2789. You're listening to Dueling Tangents across civic media. We're going to be right back after this quick break. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. If you want to join the show, share your tangent, 844-967-2789. You're listening to this program across the Civic Media Network. If you want to learn more about what we're doing here at Civic Media, go to our website, civicmedia.us. You can learn more. You can see a fun interactive map of all the station coverage that we offer across the state of Wisconsin. You can sign up to learn more. You can also check out past shows through our podcast page for both Dueling Tangents and all the other programs we put out across the Wisconsin airwaves. I'm joined in studio by my friend Jesse. Jesse.
Hello.
We're talking about dueling letters. And so we wrapped up the one that Republican congressional delegation decided to, what I believe would be a leak to the press. I'm not quite sure how it got to the Journal Sentinel and the AP.
It was really trying to pretend that it was a letter to the Evers administration when really it was a press release dressed up as something more and not even really.
And it could have been a phone call.
Yeah.
It could have been handled internally, but Republicans sent to Congress here in the state of Wisconsin decided, no, we're going to air out these grievances and we're going to gripe about them.
Also, it's fake and didn't even need to be addressed at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's, phone call, you could have really just, you
boils
know,
down to.
Could have just, you know, kept that as an internal thought and been like, yep, that's not real.
Well, there's another letter here that I think is of some importance and may put some people in trouble here in the state of Wisconsin. Because this one's pretty interesting. Reading from a piece over at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel written up by Molly Beck. And the headline, Jesse, U.S. DOJ subpoenas Wisconsin County election officials for Trump communications.
Right. So one letter was a fake press release. This letter is something else called a subpoena. That's a little bit more weighty. It carries a,
carries
little more,
a lot more weight. I wouldn't say a little bit more weighty.
Sure. It's more of a real tangible, germane thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
And hopefully enforceable by law to get these people to hand over their communications, because it seems like the new special counsel, Jack Smith, isn't wasting any time.
Nope.
And if I had to put a guess on it, Jesse, it sounds like if you were involved in, say, a coordinated scheme to submit fraudulent electors rather than the actual official slate of electors in hopes that you Donald Trump's plan to overturn the 2020 election would succeed, and then your fake electoral vote would count towards keeping the losing candidate in power, it seems like you may be in trouble here in the state of Wisconsin, but also in our neighboring state, Michigan, and down in the Southwest, Arizona, because Jack Smith is issuing these subpoenas not just to election officials here in the state of Wisconsin, in Milwaukee and Dayton County, to get their court communications with Jim Tropis, the Dayton County attorney that was hired by the Trump campaign to oversee the recount efforts, and really, also, he received the memo outlining the scheme of the fraudulent electors. But election officials in Maricopa County in Arizona, as well as Wayne County in Michigan, receiving similar subpoenas. And do you think this is a good sign, Jesse? What are your thoughts on what's going on? And are we going to see accountability for fraudulent electors?
Well, I think there was a discussion about this, you know, as the fraudulent elector scheme was emerging, both before, during, and shortly after January 6th. And a lot of folks, you know, were asking their state's attorneys general, you know, why aren't you doing anything? What are you doing about this? You know, are you doing any research? Are you filing anything? And
there were calls on Josh Call here in Wisconsin for him to do more.
And while I'm sure he was, you know, doing something about it, also realized in his seeming position as a lot of these other states were, hey, guys, this is coordination across state lines, which really, really, really makes it a federal thing. So the fact that Jack Smith issued these subpoenas to three separate states all at once is suggestive that this is a very real federal case. This guy's not screwing around. This is the first enactment of a true filing since he's taken over this investigation. And by the way,
he just got appointed to this position last month.
Yep. And by the way, he's basically overseeing as special counsel two separate and intertwining investigations, one of them into the fraudulent electors and the January 6th conspiracy to, you know, seditious conspiracy, but also Mar-a-Lago and the illegal retention of top secret documents by former President Donald Trump at Mar-a-Lago. And it's going to be interesting to see what cookie crumbles there and, you know, what's going to happen, because it looks like he's ready to move past, you know, the intro into the mid game and maybe towards the end game on some of this.
Hey, I would love some end game, because we weren't seeing any of that from Merrick Garland. Right. So the fact that Jack Smith is moving pretty quickly already with this one is nice. But then it's also important to point out, reading from the Molly Beck piece, outside of just Jim Tropis, also on the list of people Smith is seeking records regarding are John Eastman, an attorney who also sought to persuade Assembly Speaker Robin Voss to take the illegal and impossible step of overturning the 2020 election results months later, and Kenneth Cheeseborough, who sent the initial memo to Tropis regarding the false elector strategy. So we've got at least three individuals here in the state of Wisconsin, their communications with election officials in both Dane and Milwaukee County to overturn those communications.
We'll see if this spreads into what was going down in Georgia, too, with, you know, just find me 11,710 votes, or, you know, give or take, whatever.
There's so many crimes that people
number.
Could be held accountable for. It is nice to see that maybe there's some criminal prosecutions coming, too. And also important to throw out there, January House Select Committee today, the chair, Benny Thompson, announcing that the January 6th House Select Committee will issue criminal referrals as well. So a whole lot tied up into a bow, potentially.
I'm guardedly optimistic. I'm not going to hold my breath, but this sounds better than what was going on before.
Right. It's a silly holiday season that you're going to want to stay tuned to Dueling Tangents for throughout the month of December as we continue to keep an eye on these developing stories. But the U.S. Department of Justice issuing subpoenas for communications with election officials and Trump allies in overturning the 2020 election today. Folks, you're listening to Dueling Tangents. We're going to be joined by Clint Anderson coming up next. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents with Luke Mathers. If you want to join the show, share a tangent or two, 844-967-2789. You can call or text. And here for this segment, we are joined in studio by Clinton Anderson, the state representative-elect for the 45th Assembly District down in the Beloit area. Clinton, how are you doing this afternoon?
Pretty good. Getting used to the Madison traffic because I drive up here more often. slow transition.
Yeah. Well, you've got some time now with the midterms 4 weeks ago today, right? It was 4 weeks ago?
I was told that. I don't believe it, but yeah.
Time feeling longer or shorter now since Election Day?
I would say a lot longer. When you're campaigning, you're running around. I would complain that I don't have enough hours in the day, and now I'm like, oh, wow, it's only been a couple weeks.
I can understand how that seems a lot longer then. Yeah. And Jesse, you've worked on campaigns. Would you find the time after campaigns to be longer or shorter?
One of the things I always love about working on a campaign is because it's like a race, you know, like call it a race, but there's a deadline. There's an end point to it. And then afterwards you can breathe. So it's this flurry of emotion and anxiety leading up as things get tighter and tighter, and there's not just enough hours in the day. There's not enough minutes in the hour. There's not enough seconds in the minute. And then all of a sudden,
one big deep breath.
Several drinks that night, and then you can breathe for the next several weeks.
Is that how you felt, Clint?
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of like this. Okay, we won. Now what do we do? And we're kind of getting to that spot again where it's like we're about to be inaugurated. Okay, what now? So we're kind of doing another build up where it's a different kind of excitement, but you kind of. You do all that work, and then you're like, okay, what do I do next?
And when's your inauguration date?
January 3rd.
All right. So the same day, I believe, Governor Evers is sworn in for his second term. Is that correct?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. All right. And so what is let's tell the listening audience a little bit about who Clinton is then. You just got elected to the state assembly, but this isn't your first foray in politics. What did you do before running for state assembly?
Yeah, I actually ran for the state legislature in 2016 in a different assembly district that was maybe not a shock to the audience, very gerrymandered. So
what? Here in Wisconsin?
I know. It is crazy to believe that we have unfair maps, but yes, we do. So I did that in 2016. Obviously, was unsuccessful, and then I decided to run for city council right after that. And 6 years later, I'm representative-elect to the 45th. So it's been a... It's gone by very fast and also slow at the same time. Those that are elected or run for office understand that very well.
Yeah. And so the local experience, Beloit City Council, that's important work, though. So the work that you did on the Beloit City Council, what kind of experience did you get to build delivering for the community of Beloit?
It was really just working with constituents, answering questions. I mean, I've heard this from a lot of state legislative, elected officials that have said, well, I got the biggest things accomplished when I was a local elected official. And I'm really kind of reflecting on that now that I just filed my non-candidacy to not seek re-election to the city council. It was like, okay, yeah, I helped this resident with a trash collection issue or a parking issue. The small things that really you don't think in the grand scheme of things matter, but to that resident mean the world to them. Those are the things that I think almost every elected official say, yeah, that was the best thing, is helping somebody through something to them was incredibly important. But if you ask somebody else, like, oh, I answered a question about snowplow removal, everyone's like, okay, well, who cares? Well, it's like that resident really cared.
Yeah, the person that needed the snow removal.
They really cared. Yeah. And it felt really rewarding to help them out and help them navigate it, because even if you're in it for a while, government's tricky. There's a lot of moving pieces, and you don't know who to ask. So it's great to be that person in the middle, helping them kind of navigate all the resources that are available.
Nice.
I think a lot of people underestimate the importance of constituent services.
Oh, it's huge.
Sure. You got like a Madison Cawthorn still is technically in the House of Representatives down in Asheville, North Carolina, and he's already shut and moved out of all of his offices, which is, you know, sounds, you know, comical. And yeah,
I was going to say that. Why would you bring him up first of all people? But that's a good example.
Because it just illustrates how Republicans don't do a very good job of understanding the full import of that office.
And Republicans tend to run on the fact that government's broken and they can't deliver those services. So it would be weird if they delivered those services.
That's exactly right.
24/7.
Answering their phone? What?
Yeah. And so representing the 45th Assembly District in these new maps, somebody in the listening audience may be represented by you, Clinton, and not know it yet if they were, say, not tuned in for this past election cycle, didn't know that the maps changed. Where does the 45th Assembly District cover?
The very broad view is Western Rock, Eastern Green, but if you're looking at some of the municipalities, it's most of Beloit, all of Orchardville, Evansville, Broadhead, Monticello, Albany, and goes all the way up north, the town of Exeter, as far west as Adams Township. So it's a pretty good sized district, a lot of driving, but I've enjoyed getting to know all those communities. They're pretty awesome.
Yeah, and it's good to know. And so, folks, if you live in any of those areas Clinton just announced, you're going to receive some excellent constituent services, it sounds like, coming up in this next legislature.
I'm very excited to do that.
Awesome. And so tell us a little bit about the decision to go from Beloit City Council to running for the State Assembly. This is not necessarily the most attractive job, I would say, from an outsider's perspective. There's a lot of partisanship, and there's a lot of not legislating, I could say, I guess, from the way that the last calendar was set up. What motivated you to want to run for this seat, and what are you hoping to do for the 45th Assembly District now that you're elected?
We don't have enough time to explain every little detail about why I wanted to run, but I do hear a lot of that, why would you do this, and you know, it's so partisan, but you know, unfortunately our local politics have become so partisan too, especially in the wake of COVID. We've seen school boards become hyper-partisan, mm-hmm. so there's no, I personally believe there's no such thing as a nonpartisan elected official anymore, but what really motivated me was the desire to help people. I do that in my day job. I work with kids that are struggling with various mental health needs. And I know that we can't magically solve every issue up at the Capitol, especially with the layout and being in the minority and almost super minority at this point. But I still want to go up there and be an advocate. I got the relevant local elected experience. I know how government works. And you know, when our current representative decided to run for the state Senate and was obviously successful, I was ready to step up and wanted to make sure we kept somebody in there that I thought was good enough. I felt like I was ready, and you know, here I am.
Yeah.
So let's talk numbers for just a brief moment.
Jesse's the behind-the-scenes kind of campaign guy, so he loves to talk the numbers. Folks.
Sure, yeah. So if we go, I won't go too far into the weeds. I know, you know, like Dom
McCrute. Okay, but we're
Dom McCrute refused to do math on air. I do not, sir.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're not afraid of math on the air, so that's totally fine. And here on Dueling Tangents, we encourage tangents from now and then. So let's go down the numbers tangent.
So, Clint, what did you win your district by, ballparkish?
I was like, I think I got 55, 56% of the vote. Oh, not in the mic. I said that earlier. I'm not good at mics. 55, 56% of the vote.
That's stellar. So in that same area.
It's a landslide in the state of Wisconsin, folks.
It sure is. And I got to imagine it's hard putting together a campaign strategy when the maps have been so drastically altered on the ground. Like how are you and your campaign team looking at that and trying to figure out what your expected turnout where and where you were going to target for contacting folks?
I mean, really it was, you know, in the places that we knew we needed turnout, we knocked heavily. And then the places that we weren't expecting to win, we said, well, how can we lose by less? And it was just really a numbers game of knocking doors. We looked less at the margins and said, well, if we knock the right number of doors in these communities, can we make make a gain? And a community like Broadhead, which went to Donald Trump in 2020, we actually flipped and had a Democratic sweep. So welcome to the Blue Bastion, Broadhead. I'm very excited.
Yes. Great. And then what would you say worked well? So a lot of direct voter contact. Were there other way you're doing what they call voter touches? To reach out to voters and try and find them kind of where they're at.
Yeah, I mean, obviously a robust mail plan. I was baffled by the amount of stuff that they put into our races and the investment. I mean, we went up on TV too, which was something that you would have told me when I started this race that would have been a thing. I said, yeah, right, that's crazy. Why would you do that for a race at this level? But we went on almost every media platform possible. But it was having those deep conversations with people that probably on the surface level disagreed with you. I had quite a few interesting conversations. I remember this one, it was just so obvious. This guy was telling me about his son who had a drug addiction issue. And then in the same vein, told me that Democrats want to release everybody from jail. And I asked him, well, where's your son now? He's like, he's in jail. I'm like, we want to get him help. He's like, wait, Democrats want to help my son get treatment. I was like, yes, we want to help you. And it really struck a chord with me just because, you know, the media narrative can be so powerful. But that conversation with him, I think, changed him because he's like, I got to reassess what I want to do. He's like, I was planning on voting straight Republican. He's like, I don't know anymore. And that's a little easier for a candidate to make that convincing argument, but it really comes down to everybody. Just the more contacts we have, it increases the odds of that person voting to begin with. But the more we actually have those conversations, the more we can actually get them maybe say, well, okay, not all Democrats believe X, Y, and Z based on what they watch. You know, if they're watching OAN or Fox, they definitely have a certain opinion. They believe certain things. I've heard a lot of conspiracies that I'm like, I know where you got that from. So having those conversations can really help them reassess and maybe bring them back to reality. So even if you don't run for office, go do doors, have a conversation. It can really do wonders.
Yeah. That's great. And I've spent a lot of time on the doors myself, but it's an interesting point that last week I had on Matt Rothschild of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign talking about how we have a need for more civility and those conversations need to be had. Do you see as a plan, like representing the 45th Assembly District in the state legislature, is that a platform where you can continue to have those conversations? Is this going to be something that you would like to continue on despite the fact that you are now elected? You don't have to do this again for another 2 years if you so choose to go for re-election. Are you going to spend these portions of these next 2 years, though, having those conversations? Or what are you hoping to do in this new platform that you have now been elected to?
You know, I love doing doors. I want to do doors even when I'm not campaigning. So I've got a plan to do some doors that are more on the legislative side, just introducing myself and having those conversations about what people care about. And that's where we can find a lot of common ground. Even when I hit a, you know, random conservative door, I was like, can we finish on something we agree on? Even mm-hmm. if it's something like the sky's blue, can we agree on something before I leave this door? And that at least humanized the Democratic Party for a lot of people too. So I am definitely going to be knocking on doors. I'll be doing that for spring candidates, but obviously in the summer when there's really nothing going on, I'm ready to hit the pavement and talk to people and just introduce myself again if I didn't get a chance to talk to them during the campaign.
It's fantastic.
Was there anything that any tactics that your campaign did that you think maybe is a little less orthodox than, I mean, knocking doors is super important and that's like the bread and butter, right? That's the gold standard of making that direct voter contact, but also kind of tried and true. What else were you guys doing in the sake of ever changing technology or just trying to mix things up?
I don't know if we did anything that was unorthodox necessarily. I mean, we had a very robust mail plan, which that apparently is still very effective, even in a, you know, more tech savvy environment that we have now where people are looking at Facebook. I mean, we obviously did digital ads, but I don't think anything was, you know, out of the ordinary. I thought we ran a pretty standard campaign. It was just very much dedicated on getting as many contacts as possible. And I mean, I had a great campaign manager who pushed me beyond belief. I was actually talking to him a little bit before I got on here. I was like, some of the things that he really motivated me to do were amazing. I think that's part of it too. It's not just the candidates, a good campaign team. I mean, he would call me at 9:01 and ask me if I was on doors yet. and even if I didn't want to tell him no, it was good to have that push. Same with, you know, doing the call time for fundraising, because that's, you know, a necessary evil in politics. Him and I would do it digital, like virtually. So I would be talking to him and then he would mute himself. And I was like, oh, that means I need to dial again. So he would limit the conversation. So I think it was very much like
he's not giving you any more tangents or anything like that.
No,
it's time to dial the
next one. I was like, how are things going? And I see the mute button. I'm like, okay, well, I guess our conversation is
done. All right, I guess we're back to the phone lines.
But yeah, I think it's really about having a good team. That is, you know, so it's not unorthodox, but it's just reminding everybody, like, yeah, you got to be part of a good team. And I think that's really what we had. We had great volunteers. We had a great campaign manager. That all helped us get over the finish line.
Great.
And we are speaking to Clinton Anderson, the state representative-elect for the 45th Assembly District here in Wisconsin. Going to be going to the state legislature inauguration day, January 3rd. And Clinton, if we've got listeners out there that are represented by you now in the 45th or just want to stay tuned with what you're doing, how can they get in contact with your office and what you'll be doing for the upcoming legislative sessions?
Once we finally get an email address set up and a phone number, they can always contact my office. They can go on the legislative websites and find that out. I would love to have a conversation with them. And if they want to have a sit down, whether it's in district or they want to come up with capital, I'm all for it. Let's have a conversation.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining us here in studio this afternoon, Clinton. We really appreciate it. Folks, you're listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke Mathers.
We got one more segment left in the day. We're going to get to a couple of other Wisconsin headlines and get to your phone calls as well. 844-967-2789. If you want to follow the show on Twitter, you can do so at Dueling Tangents. You can follow Civic Media there as well at Civic Media US. You don't want to stay tuned. We got one more segment left in the day. We'll be right back.
Good luck. We're all counting on you.
Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. This little ditty going out to the country of Morocco, taking care of Spain in the World Cup earlier today on penalty kicks. It was very impressive. If you didn't get a chance to see it, the World Cup, folks, is a lot of fun to watch. And Morocco knocking out juggernaut Spain of the World Cup earlier today. But Jesse, you've been watching any of the games?
You know, we watched just a little bit of U.S. versus the Netherlands. That was about it.
Just the patriotic ones, when your nationalism can be tapped into?
Yeah, you know what? I don't dislike soccer. Yeah. It's just my heart's not in it. So, you know, we like to watch
it. Come on, man.
You know,
these games are thrilling.
We went out to get some brunch as a family and watch a little bit of the game, but, you know, I'm not
Saturday was a heartbreaker.
Emotionally attached to much of it.
The U.S. backline, had they played the same way they played against England earlier in the tournament, I think they could have stood toe-to-toe with Netherlands, but they didn't come to play on Saturday. And unfortunately, if you don't come to play, then you get knocked out by good team.
It felt like they were playing it a little too safe while Netherlands had a little bit more aggression.
I don't even think they were playing safe. They were just playing kind of slop. Like, it didn't seem... The Netherlands wanted it more, it felt like. And so you saw the results in the end score, 3-1, Netherlands won. Morocco won on penalty kicks. Their keeper blocked the first three attempts by Spain, all three. And they didn't get another attempt because then Morocco scored their third one on their fourth attempt. They had been going first. And so it's an incredible game. I think these World Cup games are fantastic to watch. Congratulations to Morocco knocking out Spain earlier today. And we're going to get kind of an interesting race that we get to now keep an eye on here coming up that we weren't initially anticipating, Jesse. The 8th Senate District here, the state Senate District here in Wisconsin, is going to have their special primary to fill that seat from retiring State Senator Alberta Darling. She announced at the end of November that she would be retiring December 1st. Governor Evers has then since called a special election to coincide with this spring's upcoming elections. So the primary, because more than two candidates have announced that they're going to get into the race, will be held with the February primaries on February 21st, with the general happening on April 4th. And it's pretty interesting one to watch. We've covered it here on Dueling Tangents. Again, folks, if you want to hear past shows, you can go to civicmedia.us, click on the podcast tab. You can check out all those previous shows where we discussed it when it got broken, when the news was breaking. Words are hard sometimes, Tuesday.
I think this upcoming Supreme Court race bears some discussion too, but as far as the special district in the 8th in this race is, Alberta Darling is giving up her seat.
She's retiring. She's not giving it up.
Yeah, sure. She's retiring to probably some cushy consulting gig, I'm guessing.
She's been representing this seat for 30 years. You think she's going into the private sector? I think she's just going to
consulting money's easy money, buddy.
That's true. You could consult from a beach. That's fair.
Sure.
But I have a feeling it's more of a retirement than anything like that. But it's going to lead to, at least for the meantime, we're waiting for a Democratic candidate to announce. There has not been one yet. State Representative Deb Andraka said that she would not seek the position, but three Republicans already in the race. And so that's where we get to keep an eye on until a Democratic candidate announces. This is the race that we get to focus on, the Republican primary for the 8th state Senate seat. And
a lot of it's going to come down to who wins this nomination to run in the general, no matter which Dem run is put up against it, right?
But you can't wait to that point. If
sure.
If you're a Democrat sitting in the 8th State Senate District, you can't wait until you see who your opponent's going to be. You got to start filing papers.
Oh, no. I wasn't suggesting that. What I'm saying is that I think this is a really gettable seat, and I think that there's a lot of discussions going on behind the scenes. I haven't heard any murmurings myself about anyone throwing their hat in the ring quite yet, but... you know, Ron Johnson won this district 54-46, but Tim Michaels only won like 51.5 to 48.5. So I think especially because, you know, the general election is going to coincide with the state Supreme Court race, which has a lot on the line, as, you know, fair maps are essentially on the ballot and our ability to get them without waiting until 2030. But also, you know, this idea, can we keep the Governor Evers coalition stitched together? And that's why I think, you know, Branchin represents a wing of the party that is so, you know, saying the quiet part out loud, right? Her brand of crazy is very much on her sleeve.
Oh, yeah.
So,
I mean, she's been kicked out of the closed door caucus meetings because of how apparent her crazy is on her sleeve.
Right. And I think that, you know,
she wouldn't let the big lie go anymore when Robin Voss wanted to drop it.
Right. And should she win the nomination, I think that's going to really damage her ability to raise funds to some degree. But Dan Knodel, while he, you know, knows to keep the quiet part quiet for the most part, is still plenty crazy himself. And then you've got a third, you know, like second tier candidate who's a college student, Albrightson, I think, who even said he's running more for name recognition and because it's something
he's
he always
just trying to get
to
his name out there.
Yeah, civic involvement. And I you know, I always say in my vision of a well-functioning democracy, you've got a 9-way primary for dog catcher. So, you know, kudos to him for throwing his name out there. I mean, in no...
With ranked choice voting.
In no
well.
Sarcastic way, I think it's really great to have more people on the ballot. But, you know, if he can shave off just enough votes from Knodel, all of a sudden we might get a Branchin on. And then if we, you know, really ramp up our support for whoever is the sane nominee for Supreme Court in April, who knows, that might have coattails that flips this seat too.
Yeah, and the hard part for me is trying to figure out the... Because both Ron Johnson and Tim Michaels were pretty radical candidates. And so that split breakdown. You're saying that Johnson won this district 54-46, but Michaels only won it 51-49. The interesting political calculus that will come between who the Republican is and if there is a Democrat that gets in the race and who they are, how that's going to match those 2022 midterm election top line numbers is going to be something to keep an eye on as well. And it is a flippable district. Special elections make very interesting results here in the state of Wisconsin, especially when it's a special election that will also hold the key to whether or not Republicans have a supermajority in the state Senate. And so there's a lot riding on this legislative race. There's a lot riding on this statewide Supreme Court race come April. And so I think all bets are off. Like, literally, anything could happen here, and it's going to be,
you know what,
something that I didn't think we'd be talking about, but we're going to get to talk about now for the next couple months.
Depending on who the Dems nominate for this race, and if it were a general election, they might even leave that ballot open, right? But obviously not for a special election, which is great. Depending on who we nominate, who knows? We might even see some reverse coattails and bumping support for a sane, more democratically aligned Supreme Court nominee.
Yeah,
candidate.
It absolutely can happen. The down ballot races definitely can attribute to the top of the ballot as well. Folks, you've been listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke Mathers. We really appreciate my friend Jesse joining me for this hour.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, I want to thank Clinton Anderson, the state representative-elect for the 45th Assembly District. As he said, if you want to learn more about what his office is going to be doing in the upcoming session, you can stay tuned to the legislative pages. He represents the 45th area down in south central Wisconsin. If you miss any portion of this show, want to check out the podcast, civicmedia.us. We've got Matt Flynn Direct coming up next. Stay tuned tomorrow. We'll be back at 2 p.m. for Dueling Tangents, a Wednesday edition. Talk to you then.